We are holding on Mem Gimel Amud Beis at the bottom by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, "Hachoshev l'shloach yad b'pikadon." If somebody thinks to do shlichus yad on a pikadon, now what do we mean by thinks? Both Rashi and Tosfos say, and most other Rishonim say, that it means that he actually says it. Just thinking by itself wouldn't mean anything, according to that.
According to
both Rashi and Tosfos. On the other hand, Hagoyta Bach points out that there is a Gemara in Kiddushin, there is a Rashi in Kiddushin, where he says that maybe it does even include thinking. And so they talk about, Mepharshim talk about, that maybe the vote is, how would we know if he thought it? If afterwards he was Moida, maybe that's what Rashi would mean, is that we could take him at his word and make him Chayef for Shlichus Yad on that basis. But otherwise, if he's not Moida on it, Rashi mentions over here that he says it in front of Edim, which again, not necessarily does that mean he has to say it in front of Edim for it to actually work, according to Beit Shammai, that we're going to say over here. It might even mean even if he said it not in the presence of Edim, he would already be Chayef for Shlichus Yad. And just practically speaking, if he doesn't say it in the presence of Edim, how are you going to prove that he said it? But they talk about different possibilities. Actually, the Rebbe talked about it once. The Rebbe once had a short talk with Simi Yeshivalite, where they apparently had been learning this perek, and therefore they were discussing different questions and answers on it with the Rebbe. So one of them asked, "How is it that the Shammai can say that just because you said this in front of Edim already makes you chayav for shlichus yad?" And basically, the Rebbe explained, "Look, a yid usually has a cheskes kashrus. You don't assume that he's a gazlan, but if he already went to the extent that he said it in front of Edim, I am going to be Shaleach Yad in this Pekodin, already then you have a right, already then Beit Shammai would say you have a right on that basis to consider him a Shaleach Yad or a Gazlan or whatever. Because then he lost his name on it.
Once he has the Pekodin?
We're talking about when he has the Pekodin, yeah. Okay.
What's your mice?
According to Beit Shammai, you don't need a mice. That's, we talked about that yesterday also, that according to Tosfos had mentioned that we learned yesterday that Shlichus Yad Enet Shlichus Chisorin, we discussed the possibility that maybe Beit Shammai says Shlichus Yad Enet Shlichus Chisorin, and then we would have said that our Mishnah would be telling us the Chiddush that just saying it without even doing any mice is already enough to be Mechayev. With that said, though, there are, again, I mentioned yesterday that Amban disagrees with Tosfos on that, and there's also other explanations also. The Meshach Chachma
proof. It would be chayev in case the value got low.
No. We're talking about the chayev in Oinsin, and anything that happens to, afterwards it gets broken or what have you. I will mention the Meshach Chachma actually says, based on the next piece of Gemara, that even according to Beis Shammai, he learns that they would say if you ended up doing some kind of maisis, just picking it up, as we're going to say in the Mishnah. Then you'd be chayev retroactive to when you first had the machshava or dibur, as the case may be. But even according to them, he wants to say, if you just thought about it and never actually did any ma'aseh, they would still say that can't make you chayev.
You could apply that to anything. You could apply it to Gezel. Why Beis Shammai doesn't apply to Gezel?
Because by Gezel, it's not in your reshus yet. So just thinking that I'm going to steal this guy's thing, you might be over on... You're over maybe on Lois Achmed. You can't say you're chayev for anything that happens there at that point. It's not even in your reshus here. It's in your reshus. And mind you, I mean, let's continue the Mishnah. We're going to see he has to do something. We're going to see that he has to do some kind of, according to the Sibyl anyway, he has to do some kind of mice to just picking it up. They actually ask the question why he can't just say that Kinyan Chotzer is enough, it's in his Chotzer. And one of the answers that's given is, in fact, for it to be nicknamed with Kinyan Chotzer, he actually has to do some mice with it. Without that, that's not it. Okay, anyway. So Beit Shammai says just the thought or the speech, whatever, that he's going to do Shlichus Yad already makes him Chayev. Whereas Vasil says he's only chayev if he's actually shaleach yad, if he actually does something to take something away from it or whatever. Only then does he become chayev in Einstein. Shanema, as the Pasuk says, Imlay Shalach Yadim Lachas Yayuk, as the Pasuk says, that he has to swear in Beis Din if he didn't do Shaluchus Yad. Yeah, so that means that he has to do something. Yeah, we'll see in the Gemara. Yeah.
But according to Beit Shammai,
we'll see. Mishnah continues. According to Rashi, this next part of the Mishnah is a new statement, not related to the previous machlokas. Mm-hmm. According to the Rambam, it's actually the Rambam has a gears a ketzad before the word hita, mm-hmm. and therefore he explains that it's Beis Hillel illustrating what we mean that you have to have done shlichus yad to be chai.
I need another from Pirish Mishnah.
From Pirish Mishnah, it's the Rambam, because he puts in the word ketzad.
Right.
So, hita is a chavit. If he tilted the barrel, let's say it was a barrel of wine, was the chavit, and he tilted it, according to Basil, it doesn't matter what he said or not, but whatever. Vinotal him in a revius, he poured a revius of wine out of it, Vinishbara, and later on it broke, sometime later. The barrel, yeah. All he has to pay for is the revius because he has not done any maisa opinion on this barrel. He didn't pick it up or anything. He just tilted it. It was still partially on the ground. That's not meshicha or hagbah or whatever. The only thing you can be mechayev him for is the actual revius that he took. On the other hand, he'd be a, but if he picked it up, the nafal amen revius and took a revius out of it, the nishbara, and later on it broke, meshalom the mekula, then he'll have to pay the whole thing because then once he picked it up, he became a shaleach yad on the whole thing.
So that
and
seems like
this hill. We're saying like this hill. That's the point. According to the Rambam, this is the continuation of this hill statement. According to Rashi, it's an independent statement, not related to their machlokes. Okay. So then he would have to pay the whole thing because then he was kohen the whole thing with Hagbah, and therefore he's not chayev not only for the revius he took, he's chayev on the rest of it as well. If again for the oinsin or whatever, the revius he'd be chayev on right away. Obviously, the rest of it he'd be chayev later on if there was some kind of oinsin. Okay. So Gemara says manahani mili. Where do Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel get their respective opinions? That Beis Shammai says all you need is machshava or dibur, as the case may be, and Beis Hillel says you need maisa. By the way, I should point out, whatever points out in Ticha and Chelik Vav, that this is actually a common thing throughout Shas. You find a large number of cases where Beis Shammai considers that the initial stage of something, even the machshava that leads to it, already has significance in halacha. What?
Which type of case is?
That's one example, yeah. That the Shammai says Rosh Chodesh Shvat is Rosh Hashanah Le'ilonis, because at that point the enough of the rain of the year has fallen that the fruit that's going to come out there by Turba Shvat is already growing from that rain of Aleph Shvat, where the Sibyl says you need till Turba Shvat when it's the actual time when they start blossoming. Yeah, there's other examples. There's a Mishnah near the end of Masechta Uchtin, towards the end of Shas, that mentions that at what point do honeycombs with honey in them become considered a food as far as Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara, or actually when do they become considered a liquid rather as far as the halachas of when they can be machshav the kabbal tumah? And according to one gear server, David Shammai says once he thinks to take the honey out of the hive, whereas Bissobel says only when he actually crushes the honeycomb. So there's another example. That brings a number of examples throughout Shas that we have this concept of. Bishama goes according to the potential. Actually, another one is Chana said. Bishama goes according to the potential. According to the potential, for example, they say you light 8 candles the first night of Hanukkah because you have potential. 8 nights are coming, whereas Bissobel says you light only the 1 because you look at the actual number of nights that have passed so far. Okay, anyway. So, Menahani Mili, in this case, where do Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel get their respective opinions? The Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. The Pasuk says, I'll call Devar Pesha. The Pasuk says, for any Devar, which can mean a matter, but it can also mean a word of Pesha, of Kerub.
Oh,
therefore, Beis Shammai, remember, Lama Jachayv, Alam Achshava Tamaisa. Therefore, Beis Shammai darshan the word Devar, like as in Dibur, speech. And therefore, the speech is enough to be Machayv him, or Machshava, as we're calling it over here, because, again, relative to Maisa, Dibur is just as insubstantial as Machshava. You know, in Chassidus we talk about there's a considerable difference between Machshava and Dibur. But relative to Maisa, they're both someplace up there in the ether. Okay. So, Malama Chachayev al Machshava to Maisa. So this teaches us that you're Chayev just as much for Machshava, I'll call Dvar Pesha, as for the actual Maisa.
Well, according to Rashi, Machshava is Dibur, because you have to say it.
That's what I'm saying. According to Rashi and Tosfos over here, the word Machshava here in Al Gemara means Dibur. According to the Rashi and Kedushin, it may even mean Machshava,
yeah.
But again, maybe that would mean that afterwards you have to be Moedan it or whatever. Okay. Whereas the Sibyl says he's only Chayev if he is actually Shaleach Yad, if he actually does an action of Shalichus Yad, Shenema, because the Pasuk continues, Imlai Shalach Yad, like we quoted in our Mishnah. Okay. Omelahem Bishamel Bishilo. Fine, what are you doing with the word Al-Kol Dvar Pesha? Fine, but we have our Pasuk. Well, you've got to explain our Pasuk. Im Kein Matamad Loimer Al-Kol Dvar Pesha. So Basil continues that, this is, by the way, one of the things where the Meshach Chochma says, the Shammai does agree eventually there has to be a Maise to be Chaya for that Machshava. Therefore, the Shammai doesn't bother responding what I'm going to do with the Pasuk Imla Shalach Yadei, because fine, if there's no actual Shlichus Yad in the end, the Machshava means nothing.
Sophia, Machshava, which is deeper, on a large portion of items, and then he was Shleich Yad later, on one of them, and then even later than that, there was Aynes on all of them.
then he's chayev on all.
Well, no, that's what the Mishnah said about the barrel. That's what he said. He took out a revius and he becomes chayev on the whole thing.
So what's an afkamina here, then?
Because here Bishama is saying that just the thought of shlichus yad or the speech of it already, whatever, makes what, a barrel is different. Okay, right. Yeah, okay, that's true. The Gemara at the end of it here is going to talk about the difference maybe between a barrel and a bag of coins. Okay, but yeah, once you do shlichus yad in some of it, you may or may not be chayev on all of it. That we're going to get to soon. But the point is, according to Bishamai, just the speech, I'm going to do shlichus yad, is enough to be mechayev you already. And according to Dvar Pesha, according to Bishamai, only when you do it. And according to the Mesha Chachma's understanding, only if, according to Bishamai, if you thought about it, later on you actually did some action of shlichus yad, you become chayev retroactive to when you thought about it. So if it had an oneness happened to it between those two times, right, you would already be chayev for that. That's
that's his condition.
That's his condition. Okay. So, the Tillel says, "Imkein matam alayma akol drav pesha." Fine. What are you doing with the words "akol drav pesha"? We say like this: "Sheyochol ein li elahu." Because if it hadn't been for those words, you would think that only if he himself directly does the shluchas yad, he should be chayev. Amal avdei l'shluchim inayin. How do we know? Let's say he told his eved or his shliach to commit the shluchas yad. How do we know that he would be chayev? Again, usually you have the rule as we talked about yesterday: ein shliach l'dvar aveira. If Reuven sends Shimon to commit an Aveira, usually Shimon's the one who's Chayim. How do we know that this is not like that? This is one of the, we said yesterday, Me'ila is one exception. Shlichus Yad is another. The Gemara mentions in Kiddushin and Sugya about this, that a third one is Tavach HaMachar, Shechting, was selling a stolen animal. So how do we, usually in Shlichus Yad Aveira, but in these cases, yes, Shlichus Yad Aveira. How do we know that? Talmud Lomar, I'll call Dvar Pesha. That is why it says, I'll call Dvar Pesha, that even if it was just a word of Pesha, he verbally says to the other person, to do the Pesha, he's the one who's chayim.
From the
Dvar. From the Dvar.
Why does the Dvar include?
Because Dvar means word. Because Dvar means Dibur. You become chayim on the basis of the Dibur.
No, but how do you know it applies to the shlichus?
Because that's what it means. Dvar pesha. I told you to do to be shaleach yad, and I'm the one who's chayev. The truth is, I should mention the Sman Shulchan Aruch talks about that this may only be if the shliach himself is not capable of paying it back, or he's not a ben das, or he's not a bar chiyuv, or whatever. If he is, the Sman argues, then the shliach himself nevertheless will be chayev. All we're saying is that in a normal case, in shliach with bar aveira, it means, in other words, the shliach is going to be chayev, and the shaleach is going to be potter, at least medine adam. And if the shliach is not able to be punished for one reason or another, that's it. The shaleach is still potter, medine adam. Here, what the Sneh is saying is, the pasuk is teaching us, according to Bishilo, which is, of course, the halacha, that if the shliach is not a bar chiyuv, if he's not capable of being punished for it, then fine, it goes back on the shaleach. But if he is, then it stays with him. Well, it's a cut, and you can't really send it to the shliach, but whatever, yeah. Okay. Well, you have to speak it, and again, according to Rashi, in front of the presence of Aiden.
You have to speak it and do it, according to... You
have to speak it, right, but that would be enough, yeah. Okay.
Well, that's not the halacha.
Right. But lost in love, it will be. Lost in love, it will be. Yeah, lost in love, it will be. For right. Shammai, right?
It won't be any
pushing. Fine, okay.
That's why.
Right. Fine. Mishnah says, Hita Esachov Eschola. The Mishnah distinguished between whether you just tilted the barrel and took a revius versus whether you picked it up and poured out the revius. Amar Rabba, Lo Shonu Ela Nishvara. This that we're talking about, that there's a difference between whether you picked it up or not, is only if it broke at some point later on, which after all, breaking is an onus. You didn't expect it to break, and it did unexpectedly. Therefore, you can argue, if you didn't do Meshicha or Agbah on it or whatever, you're going to be potter. Aval Hechmitza, but if instead what happened is, after you poured off that revius of wine, the rest of the barrel went sour, Meshalem is cooler, then either way you're going to have to pay the whole thing. My timer, why is that? Giri Dide Huda'anu Lei. Because it's like his arrows, in other words, he directly caused it. You know how, like, when you open a bottle of milk or whatever, the rest of it goes sour faster. It's the same thing with wine. You took out some of the wine, therefore that caused the rest of it to go sour. It was directly because of your maita, and therefore you're chayiv, regardless whether you picked it up or not. Rashi actually uses an interesting expression. It is a maita, that's the point. And Rashi actually uses an interesting expression. Pshiyahi umazik biyadayim, who. It's pshia, and he's a mazik with his own hands, which leads Mephoshim to discuss, what is Rashi saying? Is it considered a pshia from the point of view of the dinim of shomrim, or is he considered a mazik, meaning leaving aside the dinim of shomrim, he's a mazik? Is he chayiv mitzad shlichus yad, or is he chayiv mitzad mazik? Okay.
What's the big difference between
There's still a difference. There can still be a difference. I don't remember what they discussed exactly, but whatever. I mean, there can be differences.
Shia seems to go by intent.
Yeah, well, Mazik also goes by intent.
No, Mazik has to be by results.
Okay. All right. I don't remember what they talk about the actual Maskimina would be, but whatever. Okay. The Rambam, by the way, has a different explanation. He says the vote is not so much that you poured off the Revius, but rather the fact that you shook the barrel. That's also likely to make it spoil faster. And therefore, again, just the tilting it is enough.
The one expert. Rashi doesn't say that. He was an expert.
They say that Rashi was a wine expert. Was he really? I don't know. It's one of the...
Wine.
Who says?
Everybody says that doesn't mean it's true.
Rashi lived in a wine growing area, it is true, but I don't think there's any real solid evidence that Rashi worked as a wine grower.
The areas that say there's.
So, okay, he lived in that area. He lived in Champagne. Yeah, it doesn't mean that he himself, you know. Just like not everybody.
In Champagne. He lived in northern France.
He lived in Troyes. He lived in Troyes, which is in the area of Champagne. Yeah. Whatever. The same way as not everybody who lives in Italy is a musician, not everybody who lives in Champagne is a vintner. Okay, onward. Okay.
Or a Marfian,
yeah. Okay. The Mishnah says, I was trying to be nice. The Mishnah says, he'd be of a nothal and metal. Come on, no, that's not what he'd be of a, come on, no, we got, come on. He'd be of a nothal and metal. Although the Mishnah had said that if you pick up the barrel and pour off the revius, then you become chayiv on all of it. Amar Shmuel, loy notal notal mamish. Actually, the word notal over here does not necessarily literally have to mean that he poured off a revius. El kivinchi, be a little afishle notal. Even if he just picked it up intending to pour off a revius, but he didn't actually pour it off yet, he will still be chayav for the whole barrel. Question is, lema fasava Shmuel shluchos yaden etzichich sarin. Does that mean that Shmuel holds the opinion that we've discussed a couple of times in the last few days that to be chayav for shluchos yad, there does not necessarily have to be anything missing? Because that's what it sounds like. You picked it up intending to pour off a revius, you didn't actually pour it out, and you're still chayav. The answer is Amri. The answer is Loi. Not necessarily. Because shiny hacha, because here it's different, denichale de tevich kula chavis basis laha revius. Because maybe actually what he wants to take that revius for himself. However, he keeps in mind what we just said, a non-full barrel spoils faster, and the revius itself is going to spoil faster. He would rather that keep that revius together with the rest of the barrel. In other words, Shmuel would say, normally, if you just pick up the pekodin, if it's any other kind of pekodin, and you just pick it up intending to do shlichus yad, and you don't actually do it, then... Or, let's say, use it, like we talked about yesterday, for example, to climb up on or whatever,
right.
That wouldn't make you necessarily a shalayach yad, because it needs tzricha chisaron, maybe, and here there's no chisaron involved. I should have mentioned, by the way, when we were discussing this over the last couple of days, a number of Rishonim learn that in order for, that you also, when we talk about shoyel shalomidas or whatever, it may also depend as the kind of thing that the owner would be makbid on. The owner may be makbid on you climbing up on it, let's say. But for example, he wouldn't necessarily be makbid if, let's say, if you put something down on it. So you couldn't say that would make you a gazlan or whatever. But even let's say it was an actual shlichus yad, but there's no chisaron. Maybe normally Shmuel would say that you're putter. But in this case over here, since wine it only is well kept if it's in a full container, we consider it, Rashi says, as if he actually took out the revius and then put it back in there to stay with the rest of the wine. And therefore, there's grounds to be mechayev.
If he didn't take it out,
Rashi says, we would still consider him a shoyel on the rest of the barrel. We would consider him a gazlan on the revius, which he intended to take for himself, and we would consider him a shoyel on the rest of the chavis, and then it would depend on what we discussed yesterday, whether a shoyel, because he's effectively borrowing the rest of the wine to serve as a basis for the one revius that he intends to keep for himself. That he intends to drink or whatever.
Just took a revius.
But he didn't
even have the kavanah.
But that's the point. Just like we talked the other day, we said one among the possibilities we discussed about the difference between shlichus yad and gzela. One of the differences, Tosfos talked about it over there, was that shlichus yad may involve where you take some of it, and gzela may involve where you take all of it. Mm-hmm. So here also, you're committing shlichus yad by taking that revius. However, you didn't actually take it. But you intended to, however, then you had in mind, if I take out that revius, it'll spoil quickly. I don't want it to, so I'll leave it in the barrel for now. Nevertheless, though, you're still effectively a gazlan on that revius, and a shoyel, Rashi says, on the rest of the barrel.
Now,
and therefore, either way, you're chayav. Because the rest of the barrel you're using as a basis, you're borrowing it.
He uses
You're using it, you're borrowing it to serve the needs of that one Ruvius that you want to take.
But just to clarify, you didn't take anything out.
No, you took her.
No, you didn't take the Ruvius, we're saying. That's what Shmuel was saying. Loin notol not the mamish. You didn't actually take out the Ruvius.
Tilted it and thought about it.
You tilted it. You thought about doing it, right.
And then you
not only tilted it, you picked it up, we said. Picked it up, intending to take the Ruvius of it. Right. You tilted it, maybe also intending to take out, but then you put it back without actually pouring out the Ruvius. Shmuel was saying at that point, effectively, what it means is it would sort of be like, in that sense, it would be a little bit like what Rashama is saying, you don't, but not really, because you did more than a choshev. You actually picked it up. You did a maisa with it, but you didn't actually take out the revius. Fine, but you didn't take out the revius, not because you decided, you know what, I can't steal, but because you decided I don't want that revius to spoil before I have a chance to drink it. I'll take it out later.
Every time I go to Shabbos and again, the minute
you're not a shomer. You're not a shomer on the bottle of wine. Come on, the owner of the host over there gives you permission to pick up the wine and pour yourself some. Come on, we're not talking about that. Okay. Anyway,
if you don't say anything.
Here, watch this wine for the next
Come on. Okay. Boy Ravashi, Higbia Arniki Little Hemenadino Mahu. What about, let's take a similar example. Suppose that the Pekudin instead was a purse full of money. He picked up the purse intending to take one dinner out of it. What would be the din? Would we say the same kind of thing that he maybe becomes a shoyl on the rest of it or not? Do we say
he was made a shomer?
Obviously, we're talking about. Do we say chamrahu delaminter ella agav chamra? You might make a distinction because when it comes to wine, you need the whole barrel to be full in order for the wine to be preserved and not spoiled. Therefore, of necessity, you're not taking out that revius at the time. It's not you're not taking it out because I've decided I'm going to be honest after all. You're not taking it out because I don't want it to spoil. But one coin by itself, you're capable of keeping it on its own without it spoiling. So therefore, in that case, fine, you could say maybe he's a shaleach yad on that one dinner. You can't necessarily say he's a shoyl or shaleach yad on the whole rest of the purse.
You said the same thing on the basis. But
you don't need the whole money as a basis for that coin. One coin is capable of standing on its own.
Or
maybe not. Shainin tirusa da'arnikim in tirusa de dinner. Or you could argue, a whole purse of money is more visible and easier to guard than one individual dinner. Therefore, in that sense, you sort of are using the purse as a basis for that dinner. You're not, again, maybe you could argue you're not taking out that dinner right now, not because you decided to be honest, but because you don't want it to get lost. You want to hold on to it so that later on you'll have a chance to take it, and you're using the rest of the basis as the rest of the purse as a basis for it. Take it.
Thank God we're done.
And what does that mean? I mean, the halacha has to be the halacha. You know what? Today's Tanya mentioned that every time you have a kasha in Torah, it's mitzvah to tovurah, it's klipas noga, which is covering up a din in Torah. So, you know, this is why we need to kishmi yitadis kushas yivoyas, mini Mashiach, and we need Eliyahu Hanavi to come and explain all these tzvekas and get rid of all the remaining klipas noga. Hadron halacha maskin. Okay. This next perek is going to talk about this next parak. We're now going to get into a lot of dinim involving business. The first part of the parak is going to talk about a couple of major concepts, including kinyan chalifin, which we talked about some in kedushin, but now we're going to learn mainly about how chalifin. We're going to learn a lot more about kinyan chalifin, and in particular how it applies to coins, because there is a general rule which we're going to learn in the Mishnah. We're going to see further in the Gemara that chalifin is not relevant when it comes to coins. Chalifin is you're exchanging goods for goods. Chalifin is not relevant when you're exchanging money for goods. Coins are money. We have to figure out exactly between different kinds of coins themselves which ones have different statuses. That's the first thing we're going to be dealing with. So when we're talking about kinyan chalifin, we're going to be talking in general about, we're going to be talking about in more generally kinyan chalifin, and even more generally than that, certain dinim that imply to kinyanim in general. We're going to talk about the concept called mishapara, which is that there does come a point once mashiach or what have you, some kind of kinyan has been done where the deal is complete and the other party is chayav to pay. But there's a point before that where if money has changed hands but the goods haven't yet, if either side wants to back out, they're going to have to accept a certain curse that the Mishnah just mentions. If the Gemara expands on it, that curse is actually put on him in Basin. To warn him of the seriousness of not keeping his word. So we're going to talk about that, Mishapara. That's going to be the first few blocks of the Perek. After that, we're going to get into most of the rest of the Perek. Is going to talk about the concept of Oinah, the Torah tells us that, about the din of Onah, you're not allowed to overcharge and you're not allowed to underpay. So we'll deal with all the ins and outs of those dinim. And then towards the end of the parak, we'll have a little bit about Onah. We'll have a couple of blocks about Onah's Dvarim, the related thing, not to hurt somebody's feelings. And then at the very end, a couple of other miscellaneous things having to do with business.
Mishapara, Onah.
So we have Chalifin, money, Mishapara, Onah, and Onah's Dvarim, and some other misses. I should also mention a big thing that's going to come up again and again throughout the parak is going to be the dinim of Maisa Sheni, the dinim of exchanging Maisa Sheni for coins, because that's going to bear on all of what we're talking about over here as far as coins. There's going to be a big bit about that. You could almost say that large parts of our Gemara are almost like a Gemara on Masechta Maaser Sheni, which doesn't have Bavli of a sudden.
Large parts
of this parak. Mishnah starts off. Hazahav koneh hakesef. Gold acquires silver. Hakesef ene koneh hazahav. But silver does not acquire gold. Meaning like this: if two people are exchanging, you go to a currency exchange place, you go to a shulchan or what have you. You have a gold dinar, you want to exchange it for silver coins or vice versa. Given that we said that chalifin does not apply to coins, chalifin only applies to goods, then you have to figure out which one over here is considered the coin and which one is considered the goods. So the Mishnah is telling us, therefore, when it comes to gold versus silver. So if one of them, similar idea, fine. If you're going to be Mashicha, that's Kinyan Chalifin usually works, fine. Whether it's Chalifin, whether it's Mashicha, whatever, the point of the matter is that you're doing Mashicha, or the one side is doing Mashicha on the goods. So it doesn't matter whether it's Chalifin or regular Kinyan, whether it's a regular Kinyan, whatever it is, if you're doing something. That's what we're going to talk about. Right. Well, that's Rashi says later on in the Mishnah. Right, that there are two. When both things being exchanged are metalpolin or goods, then it could be either way. It could be kinyan chalifin, or it could be betorat damim. That was saying that you're going to sell me yours for X amount. I'm going to sell you mine for X amount. One does the meshicha on one, and the other one becomes chayiv in that amount of money or that amount of goods. But here, where we're talking about money is involved on one side or both sides, one of them has to be considered the payrus, the other side has to be considered the money. Which is which? The Mishnah is telling us gold is considered payrus, is considered the commodity relative to silver. And basically, what we're going to deal with in the Gemara...
Silver would be the currency.
Silver is the currency. Gold is the produce, right. So, in other words, you have to consider...
Even gold coins?
That's what we're talking about, gold
yeah.
coins. The point is like this, in other words, you have to have some kind of fixed standard of value. That's what money is. The definition of money is it gives you a fixed standard. Everything else, the value of it is relative to that. You know, in modern terms, for example, you talk about inflation, for example, a dollar buys more or less than it used to, let's say. In halacha, you really look at it kind of the other way around. The price of the dollar or whatever it is, let's say, stays fixed. The amount of commodities that it will buy goes up and down. But the actual value of the coin,
relative to what?
That's the thing. Relative, for example, you know, now let's say a loaf of bread is $3. You know, 10 years ago it was $2, whatever. In a modern day economist would say that the dollar has gone down in value by 50% or whatever it is. A local would say the price of commodities has gone up by 50%. The value of the dollar has remained the same. We'll see in the Gemara. We'll see how that plays out. The point is the same thing over here. We're saying silver is the standard of value. Gold fluctuates relative to it. If you ever in American history, you have there was a whole thing about it. I used to have there was the gold standard, the silver standard. There were major political arguments about it. Yeah. So what our Mishnah is saying is that we're on a silver standard. Silver is considered the standard of value. Okay. So therefore, so the person who gave the gold dinner, for example, in this case, now the other person is chayav to pay him a certain number of silver Okay, if you want to see, okay, well, no, but there's a major difference. Like this, hazahav koneh hakesef, hakesef ene koneh hazahav. If I have a gold dinner and I want to exchange it for, the Gemara is going to say, 25 silver dinarim of yours, if I give you the gold that and you do meshicha on it, that obligates you to pay me the 25 dinar, and neither of us can renege on it. Because gold is a commodity. As opposed to the other way around, if you have given me the 25 silver dinar, that wouldn't, I would still have the ability to renege on the deal, and so would you, for that matter.
Absolutely.
There'd be mishapara, as we're going to talk about, but you'd have, there's no mishicha of commodities has been done.
No,
yeah. Similarly, the Mishnah continues.
That's what you mean with karka?
No, we're not talking about karka. We're talking about talcum. Karka we're going to deal with later. Copper coins acquire silver ones. Same idea, in other words. Relative to silver, copper is considered the commodity, for reasons which we'll discuss in the Gemara. Yeah. But the silver doesn't acquire the copper for the same reason. The kesef, the silver, is considered to be the unit of value. Again, silver standard, not gold standard, not copper standard. Bad coins acquire good coins. Rashi says that bad coins means coins that have been withdrawn from circulation. Shenifsalu, Rashi says. The government declared them no longer legal tender or whatever. Tosfos argues with that. Tosfos says that Mois Harois means that they don't circulate as readily as they used to, but it's still possible to find people who'll take them. It hasn't been officially withdrawn by the government. It's just it's harder to find them circulating, basically. Anyway, those are considered commodities relative to the yafes, relative to the good, regularly circulating coins. So therefore, again, one person gives the other one Mois Harois, the other person is automatically obligated to give him the Mois yafes once he does Mashiach on it. But the good coins are not kind of the bad ones for the same reason. Again, because the good ones are the money, the bad ones are the commodity. And by the way, Mephoshim point out, the chiddush of that part is, even if we're talking about different metals, let's say the Mois Harois are silver, and the Mois yafes are gold or copper. We just said that gold and copper are payers relative to silver, but if the difference is also one of them is yafes and one of them is rois, that takes precedence
over
the difference in metal. By the way, Mephoshim also discussed the interesting question, what about silver, what about you exchanging silver for copper? Gold for copper, then which one takes precedence. So we'll see in the Gemara, we'll see what the advantage is.
You couldn't do that, you have to go through silver.
Why? If a certain number of copper coins are worth one gold coin, may take a couple of thousand of them, but whatever, it's possible to make such an exchange. So then the question is, which one is considered the payers relative to what? Okay, anyway. Continues the Mishnah, Asimon Kones HaMatbeah, and Asimon acquires the coin. Those of us who used to be in Israel back in the day remember that Asimon was one of the phone tokens they had over there. But here Rashi explains, the word Asimon, Rashi explains, means an uncoined piece of metal. Like if you ever visit the mint, they have the blanks that afterwards they stamp. That's a simon, according to Rashi. Tosfos argues with that, based on a Gemara in Shabbos, and says that then a simon does have an image on it, but it's not an important one. It's not considered like something that would be considered important as currency. Therefore, again, it's not considered payrus relative to the coins, relative to the regular circulating coins.
So what is it then?
So then, according to Tosfos, it's a token that has some kind of that it's
not silver.
It doesn't matter what kind of metal it is. It's not currency.
And it's not commodity.
But no, it is a commodity. That's what we're saying. It's considered a commodity relative to currency.
Not a full blown commodity.
No, but it is a full blown commodity for this purpose. But the coin does not acquire the asimon again because the coin is the money and the asimon is the commodity. Metalplin coin is a matbea. Again, if you're making an exchange of metalplin, of any other kinds of goods, for a coin, then the giving of the metalplin acquires the coin, and makes the other person required to pay out the coin. Matbea in a coin is a metalplin, but the coin is not coin of the metalplin for the same reason.
You give the coin.
You give the coin. You're not necessarily, the other person is not necessarily is able to renege on the deal and say, I want, you know what, I'll give you back your coins. I'm not going to give you the metalplin.
Merchant, you can say the same thing. I'm giving him the money. And he can renege on the deal whenever he wants.
Mishapara, as we're going to say. But yes, technically he could. Normally he has no reason to. He wants to sell the thing. But let's say the price of it went up in between. And now he says, I want to charge you for it. Yeah. Well, no, that's what we're saying. Then either side has the ability to renege on the deal. Zachwal, the general rule, call him a talpilin, koinim zeh. All the talpilin are koine each other. And again, here's where Rashi says, this means if you have both sides of the equation on the talpilin, you have two possibilities. Either I'm doing it as chalifin, as soon as you do meshicha and you're on the talpilin I give you, automatically I'm acquiring the ones that you're giving me, regardless where they are. or we're doing it the Torah Damim, that we say each of them is worth X amount. I'm giving you this one, and now you're obligated to pay me X amount. Either way.
Is this system from the Torah? I mean,
we're going to see in the Gemara certain details of it we have in the Torah, but most of it is Rabbanan.
Why do they?
Because you have to have. We're going to see in the Gemara, actually, the whole question. Actually, we're going to get to, in a few blocks in the Gemara, the whole question. No, actually, I should say, there's a Machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan, and Rish Lakish, we're going to say. Is it Minat Torah, the exchange of money affects the Kenyan, and it's only the Rabbanan changed it, for reasons we'll discuss over there? Or is it to begin with, in even Minat Torah, it's Meshicha rather than money that affects the Kenyan? We learn it from Pasuk and Bahar. We'll get to it. We'll get to it. Yeah, right. The difference is, by the way, what's the difference between chalifin and teras domim in that case is chalifin means you are moshech the one thing. I'm automatically koyin to the other one wherever it is. We do it with teras domim. All it means is you owe me X amount, but I don't actually own that yet. I don't actually own that money yet. I can sue you for it in Beis Din or whatever, but I don't actually own it yet. Then, what does this mean? Moshe chaymenu peiris v'leinasson leimaris. If the one person did meshicha on the peiris or other commodities and didn't yet pay the money, eini yochel lachzav, he can't change his mind. He can't renege on the deal because he already did meshicha and the kinyan has already taken effect. On the other hand, nasson leimaris, v'leinasson chaymenu peiris, but if he gave him money but didn't yet do meshicha on the food, yochel lachzav, then he's able to change his mind. Either one is able to change their mind. If the price goes down after I paid you, I'm entitled to, I do have the ability to say in halacha, you know what, give me my money back, you can keep your payers, I'll buy them cheaper someplace else, and vice versa if the price goes up, or whatever. Aval Omru, however the Chachamim said, mi shapara ma'am shadera mabul, the Eibishter who punished the people of the Dera Mabul, or Madera Flaga, and the people of the Dera Flaga, and the Gemara is going to mention a couple of other examples in history, the Eibishter is going to punish somebody who does not keep to his word. So you have the ability to renege, but you have to accept that mishapara.
That would apply to anything.
We apply it specifically in this case, where a person paid money and now wants to renege on the deal. Rav Shimon Omer, kol shehakesef yada yada al yoyna. Rav Shimon says, the rule is it's not quite like that. Whoever has the money in his hand is the one who has the upper hand and is able to change his mind.
Not
the one who did the meshicha, but rather the one who has the money. So if the buyer already gave the money to the seller, then that's it. The seller is the one who is now able to renege on the deal, but not the lekeach. Yeah. Well, for reasons which we'll discuss in the Gemara in a few days. Next week, as a chance. So Gemara starts out. Masni le Rebbe le Reb Shimon b'rei. Rebbe, when he taught this Mishnah to his son Reb Shimon, taught it the way we have it. Hazahav koneh hakesef, because the zahav is the commodity and the kesef is the currency, the standard of value. Amalei, so Reb Shimon asked him, Rebbe, shanisalona b'yaldusecha, hakesef koneh hazahav. When you were younger, you taught us the other way around, hakesef koneh hazahav. The tacht of a tishnalona b'ziknesecha, hazahav koneh hakesef. Now in your old age, you're teaching us hazahav koneh hakesef. Which means, actually, it's not so funny. Marshall says the point of the question was Reb Shimon is asking, is it maybe that you forgot what you taught us, or is it that you have a reason to change your mind? And the fact that Rebbe answered, the fact that he didn't answer implies that he did in fact change his mind. The Yerushalmi actually tells the story a little differently. The Yerushalmi tells it that Rebbe says to Reb Shimon, why are you learning it as a kesef koneh as hazav? Why aren't you learning it as hazav koneh as a kesef? And Reb Shimon tells him, because when you were younger, you taught us in the version of Kesef Koneh HaZahav, and I feel the way you taught it to us when you were younger, when you had your full strength, must be the correct version. As we'll see on other days, that must have been the version that you learned from your Rebbe, Reb Meir. And therefore, I'd rather stick to that version. Actually, the Yerushalmi does have that version. The Yerushalmi starts off our Perek, HaKesef Koneh HaZahav, HaZahav and HaKoneh HaKesef. And sure enough, the Perek in the Yerushalmi is called HaKesef instead of HaZahav.
And that's what it says?
It's the Perek there. Wait. The Gemara asked, "Bialduse ma'isaver was a knusse ma'isaver." Okay, so what was Rebbe thinking when he was younger? When he said, "Akesef koneh hazav," why did he change his mind when he got older? Like this, "Bialduse saver davar dechoshev habetiva." When he was younger, he figured gold is more important, it's more valuable, it's more precious, it's a more precious metal. Therefore, that should be considered the tiva. That should be considered the currency, the gold standard. Kasper dechoshev, where silver is not as important, habetiva should be considered the commodity. And, of course, for Kondabed Peter Lativa. The giving of the commodity is what makes the Kenyan, the Meshicha, and the commodity is what makes the Kenyan and its Kone of the month. Viziknuse Sava, when Rebbe got older, he thought differently. Silver is easier to, silver circulates more readily because many more. Kharif means, literally, kharif means sharp, but it means, in other words, it circulates more readily.
slices through this population.
Yeah, think of it in modern terms, and we don't have gold and silver coins nowadays, but what circulates easier? You know, a $5 bill or a $100 bill, right? 20s, okay, because you get them paying TMs. Fine, whatever, you get the idea.
Yeah,
20s
are the ones.
Yeah, whatever, yeah.
It's most frustrating when you take out a large amount and they give you 20s.
There is that. All right. So therefore, silver is charif, habitiva. Therefore, that one must be the standard or value, silver standard. David like charif, gold doesn't circulate as readily, because most people don't take a gold coin to buy something. Habit payra, then it has to be considered the payra. And again, v'kanan le payra lativa, therefore the payra acquire the money.
And therefore Zahav acquires
silver, which is the way we have it over here. Amar Ravashi, ki yaldusim istabra. So Ravashi says, actually, the way that Rebbe taught it when he was younger seems to be the more logical thing, Rashi says, meaning, given that Rebbe learned from Rebbe Meir, Stam Mishneh Rebbe Meir, we can assume that the way he learned it when he was younger, Akesef, Kaines HaZahav, must have been the way he learned it from Rebbe Meir. Why? Midikatani, because the Mishnah continues.
Ravashi
is saying, yeah. Midikatani, because the Mishnah continues. Hanachoshes koneh esakesef. The Mishnah continues that copper coins acquire silver ones. So, iyamet b'shalem kaspa gabadava peira havi. If you're going to say that silver is considered peiris relative to gold, the way Rebbe taught it when he was younger, hainu dekatani hanachoshes koneh esakesef. Then that is why the Mishnah further had to continue telling us that copper is going to acquire silver. Meaning, you have to realize that silver itself depends. It can be the ma'os, or it can be the payrus, depending on the circumstances, depending what else it's being exchanged for.
So there is no silver standard. It's a gold and silver.
No. According to what Ravashi is saying, no. It means that silver, that basically you have a gold standard. However, when you're talking silver versus copper, and there's no gold involved at all, then silver becomes the standard. Yeah.
So meaning the
unit of value. What's considered to have the fixed value, and everything else varies around it. Yeah, the currency. So, the alpha gabba.
So it's relative to each metal, in other words?
Yeah. So that
metal and silver is the currency, and gold is, when you have gold and silver
gold
is
the currency,
and gold is the...
Is the commodity.
Commodity.
That's how Ravashi is understanding the Mishnah, yeah?
Right. And when you have
copper versus silver, we're saying, then it would mean that silver is the currency, and copper is the commodity.
Silver is always...
Gold is the currency in the first one, and silver is the currency in the second one. Hazahav, kesef koneh hazahav, remember?
Koneh
hazahav, which means the kesef is the commodity. Yeah. So, hainu dekatani anachoshes koneh hakesef, that's the point why the Mishnah would have to continue, which again, Ravashi is assuming that this part of the Mishnah also comes from Remeir, that the copper requires the silver, meaning the chiddush would be, the afa gabda gabi dava pei rahavya, even though silver relative to gold is considered payrus, because gold standard. Legabi nechoshes tibahavi, but when you consider silver versus copper, silver will be the standard, and then silver will be considered the mafeya. Eliyamet kaspa legabi davet tibahavi. If you're going to say that silver is already considered currency relative to gold, you have to ask kashla legabi davet nechoshem inay amet tibahavi madoch. If it's considered the currency relative to gold, even though gold is more precious than silver, and yet you're saying silver is considered the currency, what would be the chiddush? Why would the Mishnah even have to bother telling us that silver, which has an advantage over copper in that it's not only a more precious metal, but it also circulates more readily
than copper?
Than copper, yeah. Where silver has a double advantage over copper. Number one, it's more choshev, it's more precious metal. And number two, de'il choref, it circulates more readily, more, well, okay, so that's the thing. The Gemara is going to say not necessarily. It depends on different commodities or different places. Wait. The answer is itzrich. That's what the chiddush is. We still need it. Sakadai dechamina, because you might have thought, hani kriti, when it comes to prizis, when it comes to copper coins, ba'asra desagi inu, in places where they do circulate, ba'asra desagi, in places where they do circulate, inu charifi tfei mikaspa, they are more readily accepted than silver, copper. In other words, there's two explanations among the Mephoshim. One of the Ritva, I think, says, no, there is an explanation. I think the Iri says the geographical one. There are places where they'll only accept silver, and there are places where they'll accept copper. Where they will accept silver or copper. So in places where they accept both, then copper is more readily accepted than silver because you usually buy small things, and small change is more useful for that. But there are places where copper doesn't circulate at all, where the people will only accept silver coins, And therefore, in that sense, you might have thought that silver is that silver. Therefore, that's the point. You might think that since there are places when copper and silver are both available to use, copper circulates more readily. You would think, therefore, that's considered the mafia. That's considered the unit of value, and the chiddush would have to be not. The Ritva, I think it says it's not really a difference of places; it's a difference of what you're buying. More people buy small things than large things. So you have some things for which copper coins are not useful at all. You're not going to use copper coins. You're not going to use copper coins to buy a car.
Right.
But on the other hand, for things for which you can use either silver or copper, like groceries or whatever, copper is going to go much more readily. It'll be much easier to pay for your groceries with small bills than with hundreds. So you would think, Hani Prita, Ba'asra de Sagi Inu, in places where they do circulate, in places or for commodities for which copper coins are accepted, Inu Harifitfe Mekasra, you would think, okay, they're not precious metal, but they do circulate more, they are more readily accepted than silver. Ema Tevahabi, therefore you would think on that basis, maybe copper can be considered a mafeya, it can be considered. And therefore, if Kamash Kolan, that would be the Chiddush, Kivin de Ikaduchti de Le Sagibe, since there are places where Bechlau, for time, when Bechlau, copper coins are not accepted at all, therefore Peirahabi, therefore in general, we make the general rule that copper is always considered payrus relative to silver.
Credit cards?
I don't know. Credit cards are not really. Yeah, well, there is an
credit cards everywhere.
There is actually an
but every place.
Okay, but I mean that's not really an exchange amount. There is actually an interesting thing. Ramosh Feinstein discusses in one of his Trovas the question of modern day currency doesn't really have an actual face value. I mean, it has a face value. It doesn't really have an intrinsic value. It's not made out of gold or silver or what have you. You use dollar bills or whatever, which are just backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. or whatever it is government. So what's the din of those? So he discusses that there are possibilities. Let's say there is deflation, inflation. Let's say the value of the dollar goes down. But let's say you owe the government, you owe the IRS or what have you, X amount. If they will still accept the same number of dollars, even though there has been inflation, then yes, we can still consider that those dollars are considered the fixed value.
Which dollars send the same amount of dollars?
If you get the tax bill from them that says that you owe X amount.
9%
a year. Later, yeah, whatever. By the time you go pay it a few months later, there's been inflation and the value of the dollar has dropped.
Right.
If they still will say that you can pay just that amount that it said in the letter or whatever and no more in the judgment or whatever, then it means that it still can be considered the unit of value.
Or better yet, if they say, we made a mistake and we found out that when we looked at your tax from 5 years ago,
and
you owe $100, you can still pay the same $100.
Well, they'd charge you penalties, but whatever, yeah.
No,
okay.
They made a mistake.
Yeah, okay.
Or whatever.
Yeah, okay, fine. Whatever, you get the idea, though. Okay. Onward, here,
they're going to give you money back.
Come on.
We took too much money.
By the way, I should mention one other thing. This also gets into the interesting question: what about currency exchanges? What about foreign currency exchange?
What about it?
For example, let's say, well, you know what? That'll be relevant actually to next season. Let's wait till the next season, Gemara. Actually, I should mention though one thing before about this business of gold versus silver. There's an interesting thing that's brought in a few places in Chassidus. There's another sicha in Chelik Vav where the Rebbe discusses it in connection with Matzah Shekel. It's brought in a couple of other places in Chassidus. Silver in Tanya, the Alter Rebbe explains that silver represents Chesed, gold represents Gvura. Therefore, the argument over here, which one is considered the tiva, which is tiva meloshen teva, meloshen the nature of the world, essentially, the we're saying over here, kesef is the tiva, is the currency, because the world olam chesed yibana, the world is built on chesed, and therefore the essential teva, the essential matbea, is silver. It's brought in a number of places in the Chassidus. The Rebbe expands on it also in Tanya and Peres Nun. It mentions briefly that concept, but this idea about how it relates to our Gemara is brought. There's a mimer of the Rebbe Marash on it. The Rebbe brings it in a Sicha. The Rebbe also talks about further the idea. Therefore, again, based on what it says in Tanya over there, therefore that gold. What is it? Gold represents the avoda of the gold represents the idea of the avoda of halal mil makalamaila of bringing the world up to Elikos. silver represents that ability of bringing the cloak down into the world, and therefore silver is considered the commodity, because that's essentially the point of the world. There's lots of slaves, but a bit of a tachanim is bringing the cloak down here.
Master Shekel was silver. So that was the Mapea.
Well, we're going to talk about it in a minute. We're talking about Atzvara Pidyon Aben. Let's continue. Besides that, we said that Rebbe changed his mind when he got older and said that money is considered, or sorry, that Rebbe, when he was younger, held that gold is considered the matbeah, it's considered the unit of currency. Rav Chiya also held that way. As we find, the Rav Oziv Dinri Mibrati Rav Chiya, Rav one time borrowed gold coins from Rav Chiya's daughter, who was his cousin. Rav Chiya was his uncle, so Rav Chiya's daughter was Rav's cousin. Later on, the price of gold coins, the price of gold dinarim went up. Also, he went to ask Rav Chiya, if I pay back the same number of gold coins, is there a problem of ribis?
Yeah.
So again, if gold is considered the currency, then no. You borrowed X number of gold coins, you're going to pay back X number of gold coins. The fact that now you can buy more silver coins with them is neither here nor there. Gold is the currency. If we say silver is the currency, there'd be a problem of ribis. Amalei, and Rav Chiya tells him, Zil Shalom Latovin Utkin.
Because
you're paying more, If you borrow gold dinarim to the value, let's say, of 50 silver dinarim,
right,
and now you're paying back gold dinarim to the value of 60 silver dinarim, then you got ribbis. Yeah. Amalei, and Rav Chiya tells him, Zil Shalom Latovin Utkin. Go pay her good full weight coins. In other words, pay her the exact number of gold coins you borrowed. So, Ian Vishlema Dava Tivahavi, if you say that gold is considered the currency, the unit of value, shaker, well then good. He borrowed X number, he's paying X number, good. Eli Yamit Peirahavi, but if you were to say, Rav Chiya were to say that gold is Peirah, like our Mishnah is saying, like the version of our Mishnah that we have over here, yeah, Havale Sava Sava Otter, then you would have a problem of something that we will learn about in the next paragraph when we talk all about the dinim of ribis. You're not allowed to borrow a saw of grain, you're not allowed to borrow a measure of grain, saying that I'm going to pay back that same measure if the price has gone up meanwhile, because that'll be a problem of ribis. It's ribis d'rabbanan, but still.
Now you're going to pay the same amount.
Doesn't matter, that's the point. Because it's commodities and the value of them varies, you will have to say, I borrowed a saw which is worth $10. I borrowed a saw which is now worth $10. If by the time I pay back a saw is worth $12, is worth $20, fine, $20, then I'll pay you only half a saw. That's the question. So if Rukhiya is telling him that he has to pay back the same number of gold coins, obviously Rukhiya must be saying we're on a gold standard. The gold is the unit of value. The answer is no, not necessarily, because Rav Dinri Havulei, because in this case, Rav actually had gold dinarim of his own when he went to borrow from his cousin. Therefore, Nasa Ka'imala, so we consider it as if it was a case of if he had said to her, Halveni Ad She'yaveh B'ni, lend me some money, just short term, until my son comes, or until I find the key, which then there's no issue in it, because we will learn in the next parak, when we learn all about this whole concept of borrowing saw b'saw is first of all only also d'rabbanan, and there are exceptions to it, one of them being if you already have some of that commodity of your own. For example, in this case, you borrow a saw of wheat. If you already have wheat of your own, then you are allowed to borrow a saw b'saw. You are allowed to say, I'm borrowing a saw now. I'll pay back a saw later, even though the value of it will have gone up. You're allowed to do that. If it's called yeshlo. It's called that he has some of that commodity already in his possession. Again, we'll talk about it in the next page. Here, that would be the same thing. Even if we say that gold is considered the commodity, Rav Taka had gold dinarim in his possession. Now he's just borrowing more. Fine, but nevertheless, in principle, he could have paid off the loan now. Therefore, such a thing is mutter, even if you say that gold fluctuates in value. Which brings Tosfos and a number of Rishonim to ask, so then why is Rav even asking the question? Doesn't he know the Mishnah? So Tosfos says, first of all, the Mishnah mentions over there that Hillel argues with that. Rav may have wanted to know whether the halacha is like Hillel or like the Chachamim. Different other Rishonim and Achronim give other answers, such as maybe when he first borrowed the money, he knew the halacha, he figured the halacha is probably like the Chachamim. Now when he's returning it, he's not sure. Maybe when he returned it now, by now the value has gone up, and therefore he has a reason to ask. Various possibilities like that. Another one actually is, he didn't actually say that I'm borrowing it, that I have some already, and I'm just borrowing it until I find the key or whatever. Maybe, do we consider, do you actually have to say that, or do we say, as long as you have it in your possession, it's good enough? Okay. So no proof really from this one way or the other what repeal. Okay. Amar Rava, Hai Tana Sava Dava Teva Havi. The Tana of the following Braisa holds that gold is, holds that gold is considered the matbea. It's considered the currency. Again, not like the version that we have, but like the version that the Yerushalmi has. Hakesef Koneh Tazav. The Tanya, as we learn, Dava is gold. Yeah, Zav. Yeah. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Pruta Sha'amru Echad Mishmoinu Meisur Heitalchi, the Pruta that the Chachamim talked about in many places in Halacha, we'll have examples later on in our parrot, is 1/8 of an Italian Isser. L'may Nachkimina, what's the practical reason to know that? L'Kiddusha Isha, it's relevant as far as Kiddushin. When it comes to Kiddushin, the amount is a Pruta. So you have to, the, what we're saying is that the, a Pruta is defined as 1/8 of an Isser, no less.
An Isser was gold?
And it, no, there's different mephoshim that discuss whether an Isser was copper or silver. A Prutta was definitely copper. Yeah. Next, Isser echad me'esim v'abav v'dinah shel kesef. An Isser is 1/24 of a silver dinner. L'may nafkimin olamekach l'memka. What's the relevance of that is as far as buying and selling. Rashi says, meaning in other words, if you're doing a currency exchange and you are giving a silver dinner, and if you say I want more than 24 silver isterin, more than 24 isarin for one silver dinner, you're committing anah. And if the guy gives you less than 24, he's committing anah, which again we'll talk about later in the parak. Tosfos says that's not what it is. Tosfos says rather, for example, you sold somebody something and said the price is 24 iser. Later on. The value of Isserin goes down, and now it takes more of them for a dinner. You can't say, well, I only have to pay 24 Isser. No, you have to pay a full dinner, even though now it's more Isser.
You should pay less.
Then you're not paying the full value that you agreed. Okay.
And you should pay more.
And if you pay more, again, according to Rashi, it's a no. According to Tosfos, it's just how much you're obligated to pay. Okay. Onward. Dinner shall cast of echad me'esrim b'chamisha b'dinner shall zahav. A silver dinner is defined as 1/25 of a gold dinner. L'may nafkimin l'pidyon aben. The relevance is as far as pidyon aben. Pidyon aben is 5 shkalim, which is 20 dinrim. If there are 25 silver dinner to 1 gold dinner, it means if you give the kohen a gold dinner, he's gonna have to give you a change 5 silver dinrim, or 1/5 of a dinner. There's different before we should talk about the details of that. Whatever. So if you say that gold is considered the mafeya, fine. Mashar tana b'midya d'kit. Fine. You can understand why the Tana relates pidyon aben to the value of a gold dinner, because he's saying the value of a gold dinner by definition is fixed. Therefore, we can talk about the value of pidyon aben relative to that. Eli yamet peira havi. But if you're going to say gold is considered peiros, mashar tana b'midya d'oker v'zil. How is the Tana using something variable in value, silver, to tell us what the amount of pidyon aben is? Which Rashi said, in other words, the point is, if there can at different times be more or less than 24 silver dinarim in one gold dinner, so how can you say, if you're going to say 20 silver dinarim is supposed to be pidyon aben, how can you say that it's always going to be 4/5 of a gold dinner? Sometimes the koyin might have to give you more, zimnin de mahadu lekana, sometimes the koyin might have to give you more change, and sometimes you might have to add beyond a gold dinner to the kohen. Obviously, that proves this braisa holds that gold is considered the matbea. It's considered the unit of value, shmamina, and that proves it. That's what this tana holds. One more thing, by the way, I know they're about to start. Myriv Tosfos points out an interesting historical thing. Tosfos asks, how on earth do you get 24 silver dinarim to a gold dinner? In Tosfos' time, the ratio was 1/12. So how do you have it? It was so different in the times of the Gemara. Now, nowadays, the ratio is about 50.
Each weight of gold 50. Was worth 12 weights of
silver. It was worth 12 weights of silver. So nowadays, the ratio is about 50 or 60, too. But yeah. Silver went up and sold to gold, whatever. Anyway, Tosfos says the answer is a gold dinner must have been twice as thick as a silver dinner. So it's not only 12 times as much, but the gold dinner is twice as much weight. Therefore, yeah, there, that's how you get your 24 to 1 ratio.
Today, it's 1,300.
No, it's not. No. It's about 60, about 60 or 70.
What?
The ratio of silver to gold.
Oh,
yeah.
The ratio.
That's what we're talking about, the ratio.